Hi, it's Rob Forbes. Welcome to Safe Space on Jacaranda FM. In collaboration with Panda, the mental health app, for the month of November, we're looking at mental health and particularly men's mental health, having conversations with some experts and some famous guests, and just getting into what it means to be healthy in your mind, in your body, and for the people around you.
Men were supposed to play rugby. They were supposed to drink and handle their alcohol. I remember that. And, if you could grab as many chicks as possible, you know, you would be kind of the guy. And that was the messages. I mean, it was just quite insane.
Join us as we have these conversations every Tuesday for the month of November, exclusively to The Drive with Rob and Roz on Jacaranda FM. Welcome back to another episode of Safe Space for the month of November on Jacaranda FM in association with Panda. We're having a couple of conversations with some men around the table to see how we're doing and just have a conversation. So I'm joined today by AJ McCann, who is from the Panda app, who is here to be our expert guest today. AJ,
hi, Rob.
Welcome.
Yeah, I hope I'm professional, as you said, expert enough.
Yeah. Reinhard Schoeman is here, popular social media star.
Yeah, look, it sounds weird saying star, but yeah, social media personality, yes.
And Christian Bartman is here, who's a musician, has got a new single out. Christian, thanks for coming to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're having a basic conversation around sort of mental health and mindfulness and how we're doing and how to check in with ourselves and what we can do better. AJ, tell us a little bit of your involvement with Panda.
So one of the founders of Alan Sweden, he and I worked together for years, and then over the time he asked me to do some talks with them, and fortunately they were a bit successful. And yes, we've done some chats with them, spoke about mental health, you know, those kind of things, and yeah, just mental health in general. Alan and I come from a mental health background, so that's where I also come from. Yeah.
Let me ask you two, mental health, what does it mean to you? What were your first experiences with it? And I use that very loosely because it's somehow only a conversation when it's a crisis,
yeah.
You know? And your experiences of being men and talking about this kind of thing.
I think for myself, my first experience with it was like anxiety, getting a lot of anxiety. And you always watch these TV shows, like I refer to, like when you watch American Idol or The Voice or something, they always not complain, but they use it as, I have depression and anxiety. And I feel everybody has this anxiety and depression in them. So it's not something that needs to be used in that way of saying that it's an illness. It sounds like it's being forced down as an illness. I feel we all have that in us, some worse than others. But yeah, my person, personally with anxiety, I struggled a lot with that. And I think I found the way to deal with it was like 2 years ago, I started exercising and I found something that I'm good in and trying to get that outlet. And I think for me, that was finding something to get rid of that anxiety. Mm. And yeah, I found that in fitness and health and yeah, little ongoing journey.
Yeah.
How deep can we go? Is this
as deep as you want?
So, I was completely captured by a sense of self-worthlessness.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough. I can't do anything. Imposter syndrome. So, in other words, if somebody tells me, "Hey, you're so good," then I'm like, "No, I'm not. This is an accident. I'm so sorry." And then after a bunch of personal problems, I decided I need to go see someone. And I was in my early 30s. Found out I was molested as a child. And one out of seven people has this issue, officially, unofficially, one out of five. And you block it out mentally. And then when I started processing that, all of a sudden, when I started processing the trauma and all the traumas associated with that, then all of a sudden I could discover who I was and where I should be in life and who I am. And from the release moment, all of a sudden my success just went through the roof. Just because I, for the first time, believed in myself and who I am and what I was made to do. And I'm a firm believer of Viktor Frankl's logotherapy. Those who have a why can find a how.
Yeah.
So I have a why, music, people, communicating love and happiness and growth. And that's my purpose. And once I see that, all the other stuff becomes irrelevant.
Got you. That's actually a very interesting way of looking at it. because if you feel like you have purpose, and I suppose that becomes a real thing, the conversations about self-esteem and our value as people. And often I think society puts it on us that these are external factors that we need to seek validation from outside. And I think sometimes we forget and we lack the tools to find them within us.
Absolutely. So as you're saying, we look for validation. We've been taught to find validation from the external world, you know, and this is in the form of, you know, be it as a celebrity, you look for affirmation, appreciation, acknowledgement. Use, and there's a couple of A's, admiration, approval, and even awards eventually. So you get this strong external, we call it locus of control, where you look for the world to give it to you. And after a while, the world can be a great place and can be a crazy place as well. As much as it gives you all that affirmation, acknowledgement, it also can throw you into a negative space. Mm. Problem with that, you can't rely on the outside world to give it to you all the time. And this is where you reach that moment where, as you said, you may have introspected, reflected on who you are. And then you don't turn your world into a competition comparison as to the external world. You turn it within. And thereby, you create and you collaborate with the world. You create something where your affirmation, acknowledgement, or your self-worth doesn't come from the external world. It comes from a deep place within you. And no one can take that away from you. But that, as you said earlier, is hard work. It's a journey. Mm. You learn to tap into that, I'll use the word, authentic self. Mm. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sense of authenticity and being able to trust yourself and your guts and know that you can make decisions that are going to help you. I feel like there's a lot of paralysis. It's easy to talk about, you know, if you feel like something might be wrong, if I don't try and do anything about it, then I can't fail at fixing it. You know what I mean? So you almost want to tap out of trying to do something about it. And I think that comes up a lot in, I've seen it referenced in terms of money stress or work stress, or, you know, if I don't engage with this topic, then I sort of keep it at arm's length.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I have it under control, but you don't really.
Yeah, no, the same thing that you were saying now is like, I'm still busy with it. Like, I don't feel it's ever going to be done. It's a work in progress. It's something that you have to work on every single day. It's not something that's going to be one day, it's going to be, oh, it's gone. I don't have to go see someone anymore. I don't have to look internally to fix all these problems. For me, it's something that is going to be a constant thing to work on every day. Like even with the mindfulness, like it's such a broad spectrum. You can be mindful towards nature, you can be mindful towards people, your friends, family, but it's something that you have to work on every day for me. Yeah. Mm.
So as you were saying, Rob, as well, you were saying, you know, if I look at something that I do with most people I engage with, right, so I'll ask them, what is it most that you fear? And the most common answer I get is failure. And what is failure? So it's an interesting concept, because we all fear failure, and that means doing something wrong. Right? That means you don't meet up to society's expectations. Now, you and I, all of us have been completely entrenched in this because, and I'd ask this question, how many answers if there was at school when you had an exam, and all of us had exams, right? And there was one mark. How many answers would there be? And it was generally one answer only, right? So if you got that answer, the incorrect answer, you were marked with a cross, wrong. So what happens though, if you look at the causes of our stress, depression, anxiety, is the fact you're faced to make a decision, but you're afraid, fearful, anxious about making the wrong decision. Yeah. But let's face it, in life, no one has the answer to what you may be facing.
Yeah.
In fact, there may be infinite choices. There is no just right, one right answer. There's infinite answers, but we assume I'll make the wrong answer and therefore I'll fail, I'll be wrong. But by not making a decision, as you're saying, by not then being fearful of failure, you also choose not to be successful.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I struggled for the longest time, especially when I was younger. And it's amazing how sort of as you get older, you sort of calm down in your own head a little bit. There was that issue of like, you didn't necessarily want to learn anything, or that sounds very ridiculous to say, But like getting information from outside and then changing your own behavior was sort of tacitly acknowledging that you'd been doing it wrong up to that point, which is very like cognitively dissonant. It hurts. You know, you don't want to be like, ah, I've been doing this thing wrong my entire life. No. But eventually you start to realize the value in hearing other pieces of information and applying them to yourself and going, I don't need to keep doing the things I'm doing if you're not getting the results. I mean, you getting that piece of information about yourself, you say, was very freeing.
Mm. I think coming back to so many of these topics, let's talk about my generation. So I'm a bit a lot lump. My dad is a bit older. He turns 80 next year. So that generation was very like strict, and you can't do anything wrong. You had a certain way of doing church, a certain way of doing business, a certain way of doing family, proper way. You're not allowed to do anything outside of these lines, which created this. And I love my parents. Don't get me wrong. They're amazing, beautiful people. My dad is a missionary of note, a very loving man. But the generation there, they didn't really give the opportunity for you to say, oh, I'm wrong. Because cowboys don't cry. You know, we're not allowed to be wrong, because that's not how things are done. You must be right, you know. And if you're wrong, it's a senior person that like subdues you aggressively and kind of, because that's how people control, yeah. Right? And that's how people were controlled in the older days, is through the manipulation of this emotional under pressure or depression. I don't know if I'm saying it right. But so the thing what you're saying now about absorbing information and allowing yourself to change, oh my word, it's so profound, because we're not perfect.
Yeah. No one knows everything.
Yeah, but even I only started realizing that in my 30s. Like, I'm 32 now, but when you're in your 20s, I didn't think, like, who can tell me anything? Like, I know everything. Yeah. You can't tell me anything. And all of these issues only came up, like, in your 30s. Like, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but, like, all these, like, childhood traumas and stuff comes in your 30s. Yeah. For me, at least, yeah. So, and now we're seeking all this information, like going online, looking at, and actually wanting to learn how to do things differently, or actually going, having the guts to go and see someone. Mm-hmm. Like in my 20s, I would never go see someone. It's like, what can you tell me that I've done already now?
Yeah. So we go through a phase in our life, and many of us, even myself included, go through a phase where you kind of think you know it all, right? Be it 18, be it 20s, you know, and because that's where life and you kind of on the same path, you know. You kind of may not hopefully make too many demands on life, but you kind of it's going along with what you want, right? But when you start asking questions on life, and I'll use a statement I like using, is like you reach a point where life doesn't listen to your logic in your head. It doesn't care about your rationality. You realize the story of your life, or I'll use another word, the movie of your life is not what you had in mind. In fact, life has gone in a different direction, and you're going in a different direction. And that gap in between where life is and your reality or life and its reality and where you want it to go, there's a gap. Yeah. And that gap is the source of your stress. Mm-hmm. And that's when we start challenging and questioning, wait a minute, we want life to listen to us. We want to be strong and back on that path. But you have to give up. If I take what I said, life doesn't listen to your logic or rationality. You and I need to start listening to life. And that's when we start asking those questions.
Actually, such a profound... I've got an image in my head, right?
Yeah, me too.
If you're driving, if you're watching the GPS, and you're driving down the road and the yellow line is on it, and if the road just starts going sideways, and you stay on the yellow line going straight, and eventually you're driving off-road, still arguing with yourself about the fact that you're on the highway.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
If I may interject, right? Just coming back to the previous state, so... So the idea of external pressure, I'm talking about young individual men in their 30s, 40s, late 20s, right? I don't know about how, I think Joburg might be worse, but in Pretoria, there's this big thing about you have to have a house, you have to have a decent car, you must have this, you must have that. And the amount of pressure that's on the young men, and I think the girls as well, I mean, but I'm talking about my how I feel emotionally, is I constantly, daily have to reject it, because if I had to measure myself with my best mate that has a beautiful house, a beautiful wife, three beautiful kids, I'm nowhere. You know, that's the same age of me. But I'm not playing the same game as him. But I see all these guys, and I went to the doctor the other day. I have ADHD and dyslexia, so I use certain medications to help me focus. And I went to my doctor and I told him, listen, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed, I'm so tired, and immediately antidepressants. Not even, we didn't have a conversation about it. The first thing he did, and I love you if you're listening, but the first thing, there's no conversation about it. There's anti-anxiety medication, and antidepressants and this and this. And so I see this whole generation of people just being suppressed emotionally just to function. And it's like a volcano that's at some point going to explode, and it might not be in the right direction, you know? I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. It does make sense, because the alternative is to change the structure of our entire society, and that's very difficult to do. You know what I mean? That thing you're talking about, of that expectation, you know, you look around, you got to have the house, you got to have the car, you got to have the perfect family and the kids and everything. And you said, you know, it's very difficult to tell yourself you don't have to be judged by that standard. But that standard exists because that's the prevailing norm. And to change a norm across a society is an incredibly difficult thing.
So that's what we are surrounded by. That's our stimuli, right? So that becomes, as you said, your parents, the community you live in, they fill you with this information, and they then start representing the world you live in. And you may have been, as you said, you're a musician, right? A musician is about creativity and very much about stepping out of the norm. And to do that, you've got to really fight your mind. There's a saying, argue for your mind, and sure enough, you're correct. Right?
Yeah.
And what we're all doing is, the word mind can be substituted for the word limitation. So argue for your limitations, and sure enough, you're correct. So to have the proverbial house, the car, and all the other things that go with it, across South Africa, I think, private schooling, complaining about e-tolls. We all do this. We all know the braai talk as such, and we buy into that. But then you realize, wait, there's more to life, but there's no other reference point. And you kind of like, I want to be something which is more authentically me, but it means being different. And then you open yourself up to being wrong, in fact, dumb and crazy sometimes.
Let me then ask you this question, because the discussion we're having today is about mental health and mindfulness and so on. What is a healthy mental?
If I had to resort to myself as being a psychiatrist, it means being euthymic. And I originally remembered the meaning of the word euthymic. It means neither sad or neither necessarily overtly happy, as in something's wrong with this person, right? But I look at it from my personal perspective, that we all, if we're depressed, anxious, we all kind of want to operate at zero, and we get a bit depressed, stressed, anxious, going to -1, -2, -3. And I think of it, rather than just aiming for zero, why don't we get into a +1, +2, positive,
and this is my point,
powerful space.
If you say the words mental health,
Immediately
people think depression, anxiety,
absolutely,
schizophrenia, padded cells, you know, like, but mental health can also be a positive thing.
Absolutely. So we all are overwhelmed. We live in Johannesburg, Pretoria, South Africa. You get up, you realize, flips, there's no lights, right? Then you go out and your tap is not working. Sadly, I'm mentioning everyday realities. These things add up. They speak of the frog in water, you know, they heat it. I mean, it's a common known experiment where they heat it by temperature 1 degree every couple of seconds, and the frog, when the water becomes uncomfortable, doesn't jump out of the water. And that's what we do. We start living with this higher state of fight, flight, and fright. And our bodies are on the go. When you drive in the traffic to get here in the rain, you're like checking out the GPS at the same time, making sure you don't drive too fast, trying to make it to the interview, and all those things add to the stress. And then you need that one life stressor to throw you over the edge. We all need to, along the lines of what you're saying, build up the resilience, the perseverance to cope with these everyday stresses. So it's no more like, I'm chill. You got to be powerful. But power, not in the sense of arrogance, but I would use the word opposite to arrogance, with absolute humility. So there's this huge paradox that as powerful as you think as you are, like when you said you're in your 20s or 30s, you got to deal with the stuff within you. As you said, the statement of, that released you. We've got to deal with who we are. And we're not going to see, when we go into the deeper space, all good stuff. We're going to see some really nasty stuff about ourselves. And rather than being brutal and harsh towards ourselves, we have to be compassionate, kind, and loving to ourselves. Not in an arrogant way, again, but with absolute humility and graciousness of who you are.
I can relate to that as well. I feel it's like being mindful towards society or yourself or other people. It's not something that you can just change. It's a practice. Every day you have to practice doing this. And the more you practice, that's something that I realized as well. It's not one day you're this person and the next day you're this person. You have to practice it every day. And even though you have like a bad day, yeah, you just have to remind yourself, yeah, to practice to do that.
So that word is important. Mm. It is iets wat jy oefen.
Yeah.
You have to keep doing it, because it's not something you finish.
Yeah.
It's a process that you're on. Because you were talking about your mindfulness that you found in looking after your body and exercising and so on. What is it doing for your mind?
There's something that I explained to my wife, like if I go work out, if I skip a day, how bad I feel that day. But there's just something about going out and completing something, and you release all this, like for myself, I release all the stress of the day and everything in a what do you call it, a workout. But it also didn't happen in the first month. Like I had to like force myself to go. But once you start seeing results and you see like what you practiced, how it, you get the results of what you practice, that accomplishment and achievement makes you want to do it more.
That's exactly the same. My co-host Rosanna does the show with me.
Yeah.
She trains 6 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, and she's always said, you know, it's because I can.
Yeah.
It's because it tells my mind that I can do this. And if I can do this, then I can do other things.
Yeah.
What about you, Christian? What's your... Do you have a practice that you go to that makes you feel a bit better when the world gets a bit much?
I'm very, very happy, grateful to be able to do my passion. So being able to sing, being able to have 100 people in front of me become joyful, is it's one of the most exhilarating experiences that one can have. So for a very long time, I didn't have time to do anything except work, because with COVID and everything, you have to work to survive. We as musicians, we had no income. So I was working 18 hours a day. I haven't had a holiday since 2019, right? I'm not even joking. Like, I have not had more than a day off since 2019, just to survive. So one of the things that I started doing was the small things that could bring me joy. So I try to exercise rather than have time though. So twice a week, that's my thing. Twice a week I exercise as much as I can. And another thing that I love is books. So I got Audible so that I can listen to it in the car while I drive. So I go through all these books, but I go hardcore. Like everything from Meditations from Marcus Aurelius right through to Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, and all these things just stimulate my brain, and it gives me space to kind of just analyze myself and who I am, where I'm going, and which creates, like we said, like it's such an amazing analogy, like a financial buffer that you have in your account. Those of you that don't get salaries won't necessarily understand this. Sorry. See, passive aggressiveness right there. Still going over the COVID. So I have a financial buffer of a month or two to keep me stable if something happens again. So that's like, it's like that, having an emotional buffer.
Absolutely.
And also another thing is, and you're gonna laugh at me, afternoon naps. 15-minute afternoon naps.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know it works.
Yeah, you just need to find your thing. Like the research that I've done is, I hated exercise. It's like, find your passion. So what makes, what releases this? So I found it in exercising. But my other passion is cooking. So I picked up 30 kgs in COVID, and that made me, like, my two passions don't really go along.
Yeah.
So it's like cooking and exercising. So yeah, you have to like find what makes you
perfect balance though. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's just
pause there. How much time
are we
left? Are you okay? How much time on the cameras?
23. Sorry, I think we're going over now.
Oh no, it's fine. I want to make sure the recording gear is not going to cut out. Thank you. This is a good chat so far.
Sorry, going very deep.
That's exactly correct.
The thing is, we don't talk about this stuff.
No,
like,
exactly.
Men don't have these conversations.
And I think that's the next part I want to come to.
If we keep it superficial, we don't offer any solutions.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows the basics. They don't wonder why there's food addiction.
Yeah. Like, alcohol abuse in South Africa, it's self-medication.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with alcohol. The problem is that we go out and we have 16 double brandies and coke because you don't want to deal with all of that.
Sometimes that's great. Sometimes that's all you need. No, I'm joking.
Well, when I don't want to say this on air, but when my sister died, I went on a binge for 2 years. I was a worship leader at a church worshiping drunk. And everybody was too scared to say anything about it because my sister just died, you know? And that's where I found out about the self-medication thing and the alcohol thing. And how you have to regulate that.
Yeah.
What's his face? Take two. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and go.
So the other thing I wanted to ask is, why do men have such a hard time having these conversations? Because you look around the world, the male suicide rate is high, the financial and anxious stress is high, and I think that's related to our traditional roles as providers and stuff. But surely we are evolved now. Surely we're okay with our partners also making a lot of money. Yeah. And surely why do we still sit where we sat all those years ago?
So, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, Rob, the women in South Africa, the male suicide rate is 5 times higher than the female suicide rate. As much as females may attempt more often, and say this, men are more likely to get it wrong or right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes,
you know what I mean?
Successfully.
Yes, successful, unsuccessful, whatever you want to see it.
Yeah.
And as you were saying earlier, you know, we brought up to be this regimented, you gotta provide, you know, the hunter, you gotta be there. You don't show emotion. Stiff all across culture, stiff upper lip, you gotta be there. You're not meant to cry. You know, men don't cry, you know, all those kind of things. So we wired that way. Genetically we in that space. And then to admit depression, anxiety, stress, even the nature of this conversation means admitting vulnerability. Now, something interesting they say, what causes a man most amount of shame or embarrassment or humiliation, right? And people give me some physical stuff, but it's actually about the fact that you're not good enough, right? You're not worthy enough. You gotta have slain the dragon, come home, be that knight in shining armor. So you're living with all these conscious and subconscious beliefs about yourself. And when life gets to you, be it work-wise, you know, during the COVID, people lost their jobs, financially not being able to provide, that impacts on your ego and your belief of who you are.
Yeah, and I find it so fascinating that nobody has to explicitly tell you those things.
Yeah.
We just pick them up
and
we carry them as if they define us, you know? And it's a very strange thing to deal with, because I think once you actually spend some time, and my own journey with therapy and so on, talking to people, you drill down through a lot of stuff, and at the end of the day, you're just scared.
Yeah.
You know, you're scared of failing, you're scared of losing things. And at the end of the day, we just want to know that the things we care about will be there, and the people we care about will care about us.
Yeah.
You know? And I think once you have that sort of realization, then the focus can change to other things. To, I'm going to exercise and look after myself, because then I can be good for the people around me. You know, I'm going to keep doing this creative thing that I love, because it shares my creativity and my passion with others, and I can see them respond to it. You know, it's not all of a sudden. I mean, as an artist, you will know. You know, people think, oh, we're going to jump into this thing and make a quick buck. Like, that's not what we're doing here. You know what I mean?
Just connecting to what AJ was saying, I think one of the biggest things that happened to me personally, and everyone's different, you know. Like, I was very hard. Can't cry. Can't admit when you have issues. I ask help for someone I'm paying to help me once, and then if they don't do it, I do it. So I end up doing everything. So I end up working alone constantly, just because I can't give away. I need to be in control at all times. Like, if I let go of any part of this, it will fall apart. Something I lived with for years, and it's so draining. It's absolutely draining. And then what happened was, when I got the emotional release, and there's a lot of components involved. That's just saying that seeing someone is really a good idea, you know, even if you think you're fine. But one of the most amazing things that happened to me was I was able to let go and also accept it was a failure.
And those are two incredibly powerful things.
And I'm still struggling. I'm just an ongoing struggle, I will say. But something that I found very interesting, something that happened naturally, and I had to make a conscious choice to let it happen, is I started crying again. Like, I haven't cried for years. You know, my sister would die, and I would sit there, I'm like, okay. you know, because I'm not allowed to cry. And then now, all of a sudden, if I'm listening to a song and I'm tired and the song is speaking to me, I cry like a baby. Because I know that is an emotional release, and letting it, keeping it in, is something else I bottle. And that emotional release makes me feel so much better, and it gives me the energy to recharge again, because now my battery is full of negative energy, right? And I can't charge that space that's being filled with negative energy. But if I cry, if I allow that negative energy to go out, then all of a sudden I can charge it with positive energy again. And that has a direct impact of how I treat my loved ones, how I treat my business partners, how I treat myself. And allowing the negative energy to go, and being something small, like allowing yourself to cry during a worship session, if you're spiritual, or in a car when you're feeling overwhelmed, parking somewhere and saying,
when Adele's belting it
too
out.
Much. When Adele's saying, hello.
We all have that playlist.
But I think that's that battery analogy is such a powerful and beautiful way to put it. You know, it's a case of, like, I find fascinating the whole concept of you're a human being. You're a collection of thoughts and emotions. Yeah. Right, that's what you actually are at the end of the day. You're a collection of thoughts and emotions. But you're allowed to try and make your body strong. But your thoughts and emotions you're not allowed to work on. Where that actually is what defines you.
Yeah.
You know, and what makes you you. And it's fascinating that working on the one physical thing is acceptable and working on the emotional thing is not. Whereas actually, like, they tie in so well together.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, even what he was saying now is, I am not that person that speaks to people at all. So, like, my wife knows if something's wrong, she just leaves me. But I think people need to find their way of letting it out, or the right person to speak to. So I went to see someone, it wasn't the right person. It wasn't a good fit. Then I went to see a second person, wasn't the right fit. So I'm still trying to find that. You need to find who you feel comfortable with sharing all of this, and the right outlet. It's not, I don't say it's easy. Some people get it a lot easier and find it quickly. But for me, it's been like a 4-year journey of finding the right way of letting the emotions out and speaking to the right people. And that will probably still come one day where I could actually sit with family members and speak about this. But it's something that I have to find my way about going.
Yeah. This is a question I wanted to ask, and we can just cover it quickly because, you know, you're saying you don't easily talk it.
No.
I was going to ask, do we have people around us? Do you have a group of people that you can talk to?
I just want to connect to that one first. Yeah. It took me 3 years because I was motivated. The moment I knew it was wrong, I wanted to fix it because I could see all the things connecting to that. And I went through 9 specialists in 3 years. And I would be in, I'd give them 4 sessions. And then I'm like, we're wasting each other's time.
That's an expensive 9 years.
It is extremely expensive. All my funds. And my friends, actually, one of my mates was a very good friend of mine. He actually paid a very big part of, like, he paid about 40% of the fee. I'm very grateful to him. But you have to find the right person, like you say. And when it's not the right person, you have to have the guts to say, sorry, this is not working. And also in your life, like, you have to let go of those toxic relationships. Remember, you can't fix everyone. You can't take responsibility.
That's one thing I always teach my brothers as well. Like, the one thing that I live by is people know you. Mense ken jou deur jou vriende. Like, and that they've been through such a, like, bad part in their life with the friends they have. If you attach yourself with the right crowd, like, and the right people, like, I got that right. Like, I'm in the right conversation, the right crowd of people. That instantly makes you, like, more talkative, and you can talk about the same things, and you can relate. And so I have a group of people that, not a group, it's one person. But, but it's in this group of friends that you can speak to. And, but obviously you need professional help if the issues are worse. But like you said, you have to find your person. Yeah, well, it's a journey.
We're out of time. I'm going to leave the last word to AJ. AJ, how can we be nicer to ourselves?
Well, okay, yeah. So if you want to be nicer, I'd say one of the things we've been talking about is, I think, the introspection and the reflection. Use other words, contemplation, right? One of the things I'm reminded of is that Mandela said during the time he was in jail, it's obviously not a nice place to be, right? 27 odd years. He says, the one thing I had time for in jail was time to think. And as men, I think it's important that we learn to introspect, reflect, think. And when we do that, Why we don't like doing that is we have to see the bad stuff and the good stuff. Mm. And the reason we struggle with the bad stuff, or let's call it the wrong stuff, is we brutal and harsh and judgmental of the bad stuff. Mm. What we all need to do is become compassionate, kind, caring, and use the word loving towards that bad and good. And what it does, it allows the bad stuff to dissolve. We actually need to become more gentle on ourselves. You know, we use this word mana, strong. We all rock. You know, football players, sportsmen, they rock. But we also need to learn, as much as we rock, learn to be like water, gently flow past. And I think that's what we need to achieve, that we need to be the people we need to be most gentle towards, because depression, anxiety, stress is all brutal, hard stuff. So we need to learn to become gentle, compassionate, kind. And that dissolves the depression, anxiety, and stress.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Christian, thank you. Renard, thank you.
Thanks.
AJ, thank you. Sure. Appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode of Safe Space, exclusive to Jacaranda FM in collaboration with Panda. If you missed this episode, you want to hear more, or you want to go and listen to some of the other episodes, go and check it out on jacarandafm.com. Click on Jackpod.